A Contra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Contra AI. Welcome. Today we're taking a deep dive into tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
Not just, you know, the old plays you might remember from school.
Right, not just dusty literature.
Exactly. We're talking about tragedy as a sort of habit of mind, something that helps us process suffering and complexity.
And we're leaning heavily on the fantastic work of Adrian Poole here.
That's right. Mainly drawing from his tragedy, an enduring mode of human understanding, and also his tragedy. A very short introduction.
Yeah, both excellent. And our mission today really is ambitious.
Go on.
We want to pull out the core tools of tragic thinking that Poole argues are, well, essential for navigating life today in the 21st century.
So moving beyond the old rules.
Forget the simple formulas. We're looking at tragedy as a kind of operational framework for resilience, for handling moral ambiguity, understanding modern crises.
It sounds like a shortcut to deeper insight.
That's the idea. If you want deep ethical and psychological tools, this conversation should hopefully provide some keys.
Okay, so let's start with a big question Poole tackles.
Yeah.
Why does tragedy persist?
Right.
You find these stories everywhere, don't you? Across cultures, centuries. Stories of ruin, undeserved suffering. Why do we keep returning to what seems like, well, darkness?
It's a great question. Poole argues it's because tragedy fulfills this irreplaceable function psychologically and philosophically, meaning it's the language we reach for when existence feels, well, inexplicable.
Like when things just don't make sense.
Exactly. That collision between what we want, what we aspire to, and the sometimes crushing reality that the universe, frankly, might not care.
Mm.
But understanding this framework, it's crucial. It isn't about becoming pessimistic. Not at all.
No.
No, it's about enhancing your capacity for resilience, for empathy, for a more, let's say, sophisticated moral understanding.
And the guide for this journey is Adrian Poole himself. Tell us a bit about him.
Yeah, sure. He's a fellow and emeritus professor of English literature at Trinity College, Cambridge.
Impressive.
It is. And his academic scope is really remarkable. Covers everything from the deep classical roots, Greek tragedy, Roman
foundations,
right through Shakespeare, naturally, and then all the way into modern contemporary drama.
So what gives him that unique authority on this huge topic?
Well, I think it's his ability to bridge that vast span. He doesn't just, you know, analyze dusty old texts in isolation.
He connects them.
Precisely. He shows how that ancient wisdom, that tragic insight, applies directly to modern life. Family dynamics, political arguments, even how we talk about global crises.
And he avoids getting bogged down in academic jargon.
He really does. He stays focused on the living, breathing questions that tragedy forces us, you, me, everyone, to confront today.
Okay, that leads us nicely to his central premise, the big idea he wants us to grasp.
Mm-hmm.
Poole insists tragedy isn't some simple formula. It's not just an outdated genre with strict rules.
Oh, like the tragic flaw idea we often get taught.
Exactly. He argues it's more like a habit of mind, a powerful, dynamic way the human imagination works.
Yeah, think of it as an ongoing conversation, one that's lasted, what, 2,500 years?
Wow.
And its purpose is always to confront the really difficult stuff, the unanswerable questions about justice, fate, knowledge, the meaning of suffering.
And the scope of that conversation, as you said, is immense. Poole traces it right from the beginning.
5th century Athens, Aeschylus, Sophocles, the originator.
Gem through the Renaissance Shakespeare, obviously.
Can't talk tragedy without Shakespeare.
And then its evolution into more secular forms, dealing with very modern concerns.
Right. Alienation, existential anxiety, the weight of systems like capitalism. You see that in Arthur Miller, for instance.
That adaptability seems key.
It is. That's why the tragic impulse survives. It just changes what its heroes are up against. The forces shift.
Okay, let's unpack some of those core concepts Poole explores. Things that are often maybe misunderstood. Starting with the big one, the tragic flaw, or hamartia.
Ah, yes, hamartia.
If you learned about this in school, like I did, you probably thought it meant a moral failing, a sin, someone's bad character trait.
That's the common takeaway, yeah. But Poole says, hold on, that's too simple.
So what is it then?
He argues hamartia is more accurately understood as an error, or maybe a mistaken judgment.
Okay, but wait, if it's just an error, like, you know, I miscalculate my expenses.
Right.
How is that tragic? Where's the profound weight we associate with tragedy?
That's exactly where the tragic irony comes in. It's the crucial twist.
Explain.
The downfall, the catastrophe. It isn't usually punishment for a simple mistake or a simple vice. Often it stems from the hero's best quality.
Their strength.
Yes. Their virtue pushed to a destructive extreme. Think about Oedipus, the classic example.
Right.
His relentless drive for truth is admirable, right? He won't stop until he knows.
It's what makes him a good king, initially.
Exactly. But that very drive, that virtue, becomes the engine of his own destruction when he uncovers the horrifying truth about himself. His strength becomes his undoing.
Wow. Okay, so that realization, finding out the truth, that leads us to the next key idea, doesn't it? The cruelty of tragic knowledge.
Precisely. The journey from ignorance, agnoia, to that terrible recognition, anagnorisis.
And the cruelty lies in?
The timing. That's what's so often devastating in tragedy. The knowledge arrives, the hero finally understands.
It's too late.
Always too late to stop the catastrophe. The moment of enlightenment brings devastation, not salvation. They see the truth, but they're already standing in the ruins.
A fellow comes to mind immediately.
Perfect example. His entire tragedy hinges on his blindness to Iago's manipulation.
And when he finally has that anagnorisis, that recognition of Desdemona's innocence and Iago's villainy,
the truth is just so catastrophic, so unbearable. It leads directly to his suicide. The knowledge doesn't save him. It destroys him.
So connecting this back, if we think about a modern takeaway from this idea of hamartia and late knowledge.
Well, I think one big one is what Poole suggests. Tragedy teaches us that good intentions alone are often tragically insufficient guides in a complex world.
You can mean well and still cause disaster.
Absolutely. It forces you, really, to develop a more nuanced grasp of ethical decision-making. Think about those impossible choices you sometimes face professionally, where every option has a downside.
The no-win scenario.
Exactly. Tragic thinking helps navigate that without resorting to easy blame.
Let's shift gears slightly and look at how the force opposing the hero changes over time. Poole talks about the evolution of necessity.
Right, ananke in the Greek sense.
In classical tragedy, that force seemed clear, didn't it? Divine will, fate. Maybe a family curse like the House of Atreus?
Yeah, it was external, often supernatural, implacable forces beyond human control.
But as the world became more secular, that idea had to change, right?
Yeah.
The gods retreated, so to speak.
They did. So necessity adapted. It shifted. We start to see divine decree replaced by forces that feel just as powerful, just as inescapable, but are entirely human-made.
Such as?
Social determinism, your background trapping you. Economic collapse. Vast, impersonal bureaucratic systems. Psychological burdens.
You mentioned Arthur Miller earlier. Willie Loman in Death of a Salesman.
Textbook example. He's not fighting Zeus or Apollo.
No.
He's crushed by the immense, invisible weight of the American dream, the pressures of capitalism, his own internalized failures.
So that adaptability is really central to Poole's argument about why tragedy endures.
Absolutely. It survives because it can always find new gods, new forms of necessity, reflecting the anxieties of the current age.
Which brings us inevitably to the question of justice, or maybe the lack of it.
Yeah, tragedy often presents a deeply skeptical view of justice, doesn't it? Poole really highlights this.
It exposes the world as frequently chaotic, unfair.
Often profoundly unjust. Think of the death of Cordelia in King Lear. She's innocent. Her death feels so pointless, so cruel.
It's devastating. It shatters any sense of cosmic fairness.
It does. And that lack of clear justice, Poole argues, leads to another crucial aspect, especially prominent in modern tragedy. The shift towards endurance.
Endurance. How so?
Well, in many classical plays, the hero might die in a blaze of glory, a final defiant act.
A grand, catastrophic end.
Right. But increasingly, particularly in modern works, the hero, or perhaps just the survivor, is the one who has to live on. They have to endure the wreckage.
Why is that shift towards, grim persistence so important for us now? For understanding our own time?
Because arguably, modern life often feels less like a single decisive battle and more like, like the long, difficult cleanup afterward.
Dealing with the aftermath.
Exactly. Think about collective trauma, a pandemic, an economic crisis, social upheaval. Poole points to characters like Horatio in Hamlet or Edgar in Lear. They're left behind. Their job is simply to carry the memory, to tell the story, to keep going.
So just persisting becomes a form of quiet heroism.
In a way, yes. An unheroic, maybe, but vital persistence. And this framework helps us confront the kind of seemingly meaningless chaos we encounter, not by promising victory, but by modeling how to continue living thoughtfully within it.
That really reframes the whole point of engaging with these dark stories. It's not about wallowing in misery.
Not at all. Poole shows that tragedy doesn't push pessimism. It actually provides indispensable tools for maintaining a sense of agency, of resilience, even when faced with limits and loss.
It also sounds like it helps with making sense of things, or trying to.
Definitely. It offers sophisticated frameworks for meaning-making. Tragic narratives rarely give easy answers.
No tidy resolutions.
Right. But they teach us that wisdom often comes not from having the answers, but from learning to live thoughtfully with the difficult, perhaps unanswerable questions.
That seems incredibly relevant for processing personal setbacks, doesn't it?
Oh.
Losses or failures that feel just random and meaningless.
It helps find meaning in the search, even if the event itself feels senseless.
Okay, but if it's all so difficult and complex, where's the relief? What about catharsis? Isn't that supposed to be the emotional release?
Ah, catharsis. Poole suggests we rethink that, too. It's not just about having a good cry, purging emotion.
Yeah.
He sees it as something more valuable, a kind of sophisticated emotional education.
Like practice for real life.
Exactly like practice. Engaging with these powerful stories, vicariously experiencing pity and fear, provides models for how to acknowledge and integrate really difficult, potentially overwhelming emotions.
So it builds emotional muscle.
It enhances empathy, yes, and psychological integration. It allows us to process deep sorrow, deep fear, without being completely paralyzed or overwhelmed by it.
Poole's writing, from what we've discussed, seems packed with these memorable takeaways,
mm-hmm.
little nuggets of wisdom.
It really is. Very quotable, or at least the core ideas stick with you.
Shall we share a few that really capture the modern usefulness of this tragic habit of mine?
Yeah, let's. What stood out most for you?
Well, first, I think, is the insight that tragedy's value lies in the recognition that we are not alone in our suffering.
The connection.
Yeah, it reduces that sense of isolation, connects you to this vast human community stretching back centuries that has faced similar struggles.
That's powerful. And tying back to Hamartia and intention. The idea that the tragic hero is one who acts with good intentions but discovers that good intentions are insufficient guides in a morally complex world.
That really hits home. It warns against easy moral certainty, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. And maybe one more, perhaps the most practical for daily life.
Of course.
Tragedy teaches us that wisdom often comes not from having answers, but from learning to live thoughtfully with difficult questions.
Living with the questions. I like that.
It's about the process, not just the solution.
Yeah.
And that leads us straight into how we can actually apply this kind of thinking.
Right, the practical side.
Consider leadership, for instance, professional development. Apply that concept of hamartia.
Okay.
How often do leaders fail? Not because they're malicious, but because their greatest strengths may be decisiveness or unwavering commitment become recklessness or tunnel vision under pressure.
Their virtue becomes their error.
Precisely. Tragedy becomes a powerful call for humility, for constant self-awareness in leadership roles.
That makes a lot of sense. And what about how we consume information? Media literacy.
Great point. Use Poole's framework next time you hear the word tragic thrown around in the news. Ask yourself, is this term being used to open up inquiry?
To ask about responsibility? Social failures, political misjudgments.
Or is it being used simply to shut down discussion? To label an event as just random, inexplicable fate, something beyond analysis?
So tragic thinking demands we keep asking why.
Yes. Keep searching for the human causes, the systemic pressures, the chain of errors, the necessity driving the catastrophe, even when the answers are uncomfortable.
And there's an application for community resilience too, right? Dealing with collective trauma.
Absolutely. Tragic frameworks can help communities process things like natural disasters or economic collapse by seeing shared experiences within this larger human context of suffering and error.
It reduces self-blame.
It can, yes. And it fosters a deeper empathy for what others are going through, understanding the complex factors involved rather than just assigning simple blame.
Thinking about all this, what surprised me most, personally, was realizing that engaging with tragedy doesn't actually foster pessimism.
No.
No, quite the opposite. It feels like it provides these indispensable tools for keeping your balance, maintaining agency and resilience, precisely because it acknowledges the world has limits. It deepens your appreciation for life's good moments, its beauty, by recognizing how fragile it all is.
That's beautifully put. And for me, Poole's work ultimately drives home that tragedy is this unending conversation. It has to be.
Because the questions don't go away.
Exactly. It's a necessary living part of our consciousness because the fundamental dilemmas it grapples with, suffering, justice, error, meaning they're always with us.
So we should leave our listeners with a final thought to chew on, a provocative question perhaps. Okay, here it is. Since tragedy constantly adapts, reflecting the anxieties of its time, shifting from divine fate in ancient Greece to social and economic forces in the modern era, what new forms might the tragic impulse take as we confront the massive existential dilemmas of our near future? Think climate change or the potentially world-altering consequences of advanced AI.
Where will necessity lie next? What will be the hamartia of our age?
Something for you to consider. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acantra Foundation.